Thank you to Miracle Maid for sponsoring this episode. What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Brandon A. Green is a father, family man, survivor of abduction, trafficking, and torture, and is an immensely strong victim advocate. He faced trauma as a youth in Oklahoma and recognizes those events as pivotal points in his personal journey. By the time he was 18, he had been launched down a path rife with dangerous, illegal activities. But just weeks after graduating high school, on Independence Day 2003, his freedom from a life of physical pain would be stolen from him forever. Still, Brandon remains to be a beacon of light, love, and hope for everyone who hears his story. Thus, the Broken Cycle Media team is honored he was willing to share some of his journey and what came next for him with us today.
I am Brandon Andrus Green. A modern translation of my full name would quite literally mean a loud and effective warning beacon. I plan on my life being a cautionary tale to others. My family has this term for me. My parents came up with it when I was young. I'm always Brandonizing scenarios because I have a knack for getting in and out of predicaments that an average person would never find themselves in. I was always a hyperactive brain and could hyperfocus on things easily and obsess. Because of my unique brand of neurodivergence and my lifelong battle with struggles, my family would describe me differently. My sister said, warm, friendly, active father, follower of Christ. My wife also commented on the active father. Prior to asking them how would I have said my family described me, probably would have been a handful. Someone that was born special. I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, born and raised. I have a good, loving family. My parents aren't divorced. I had a loving household. I'm the youngest brother. I have two older sisters. We're all separated by 2 years. My parents wanted me and finally got me, but I felt like I've been a little too much of a handful, not only for them, but for the world. I was definitely born neurodivergent. I'll be 40 in November, and that's not a term that we used back in my day. I was a little boy, so I don't know how old I was. Let's say 3 or 4. My bedroom was completely dark at night. It was normal for my parents to leave the door open. I remember seeing what looked like opalescent mist in my doorway of my childhood bedroom. Pretty thick, various different colors, but it scared the shit out of me. I tried screaming for my parents, but I had no voice. I was so terrified that nothing could come out. I would put the sheets over my head, try to hide from it, and when I would move the sheets over my head, it would still be there. I did not go to bed that night. Let's 100% assume that there was PTSD from this event. After this scenario, my family would have a hard time with me. I became extremely unruly when my sisters would have to babysit me. I would, in their words, have supernatural strength. They were no longer able to control their younger brother. At a young age, I had a neighbor that was my best friend. Unfortunately, she was being molested by her brother that was many years older than her. She'd been awoken sexually, and then it caused her to awake me sexually. But being the boy, I always assumed it was my fault.
You, as a child, don't have the knowledge of this is a type of assault. Now, having gone down your trajectory and your journey, you can identify that as another pivotal point.
100%. All these years, from age 4 to 12, I was being a hellion. At a certain point, substance abuse starts coming into play. As a little kid, pre-internet, desperate to try to feel different, I started getting into trying to get my thrills through other ways, my dopamine hits, my form of self-medicating to feel normal. Eventually, I would find marijuana as a young boy. I would be seeking out marijuana, hanging out with people that are also making poor choices or choices that are maybe based a little too much on dopamine hits and adrenaline and not necessarily using their executive function well. Marijuana was definitely not legal in Oklahoma. And by seeking it out, I would have to put myself in precarious situations. At a young age, I got involved in the black market. I found climbing the black market's corporate ladder to be surprisingly smooth. Before I was of age to be inside, I was already supplying clubs and VIPs. Then before I knew it, I was so deep that there's not really anyone to go to. You start feeling like opening your mouth is going to affect too many lives. You just start having to shoulder everything yourself. I did some other things that I don't need my little kids to hear about, but my parents, not knowing what else to do with me, they grounded me to my room. They came in with black trash bags and emptied out my entire room. They left me with just a mattress. My parents took all my clothing, they took the sheets off my bed. It had become such a point of desperation for them. And I, for the record, do not blame them. I don't know what I would have done in their shoes. I was at a private Christian school my senior year, tie, button-up shirt, whole nine yards. I was really trying to look like I was making good choices on the outside. But I, at this point, was heavily involved with higher-ups in the black market. I felt like I was missing out on real money-making opportunities by going to class. I might have a deal that's worth a couple thousand dollars an hour and a half, 2 hours away. Towards the end of my senior year, I was no longer living at home. My parents had invited me to no longer live with them. One day I came home and they said, "Brandon, we don't know what you are doing, but it needs to stop or you need to move out." I was like, peace. 2003, I'm barely 18 at this point. I am seeking mind-altering substances. I'm seeking experiences, love, and acceptance. I had a girlfriend. She was a little bit older than me. I decided to go one night to a rave in town here in Tulsa. I make money off things like raves. One of my girlfriends dances over to me and she's like, "This chick tried giving me some free MDMA pills and wanted me to take them." So I see it as a financial opportunity because this is how we were supporting ourselves. Next thing I know, my back's up against the wall. It's her, the girl that had been trying to give the free MDMA to my girlfriends. I refer to her as the nerdy chemistry student because that's what she looked like. Real cute, 21 at the time, hair in a ponytail, glasses. Everything about her screams not only academia, but chemistry. She was not very friendly. She was extremely suspicious. Our time together was more like an interrogation. She demanded total transparency. She took my car keys, searched my car. I do notice in the background at this rave, some Amish looking dude. He was tall, heavier set, bald on the top, a lot of facial hair, big beard, also had glasses. He was obviously eyeing me, but trying to blend into the background. I eventually pass her vetting process, and that next day starts the most bizarre initiation ritual you could ever imagine. She has me meet her at a Whataburger or something. She doesn't sit where I sit. She sits behind me at another booth and talks to me through the booth, facing forwards like she's not talking to me, and gives me instructions, tells me, play it cool. There's an envelope on another table. To make a long story short, it was an elaborate scavenger hunt where they had me go from all these gas stations, restaurants, answering telephone calls from payphones, looking for notes under trash can liners. It took hours. And it crescendoed late at night in a bookstore. It was surreal. I opened up some psychedelic tomes in the very center of it, get my trafficker's phone number. And I am accepted into their little club. All the while, they're watching me as I go through the scavenger hunt.
Initiation in and of itself is designed to give you that sense of you're entering something. So even that was like grooming.
Yes. I think it's important for our listeners to prepare themselves for a plot twist. It's totally unexpected, and I don't want people to get lost. But picture this. Months before I ever ended up at the rave, long before I ever meet these two, they were in the smack middle of this worldwide LSD operation. It's this global LSD empire, and they took me into their world.
Thank you, Miracle Maid, for sponsoring this episode. Did you know that your temperature at night can have one of the greatest impacts on the way you sleep? If you wake up too hot or too cold, I highly recommend you check out Miracle Maid's bed sheets. Inspired by NASA, Miracle Maid uses silver-infused fabrics to make temperature-regulating bedding so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. Miracle Maid infuses their sheets with silver so that they prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. I absolutely love my Miracle Maid sheets, and I've even noticed that I've started to sleep better since using them. To try them for yourself, go to trymiracle.com/WCN to try Miracle Maid sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order them today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo code WCN at checkout, you will get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle Maid is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you are not 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Maid. Go to trymiracle.com/WCN and use the code WCN to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%. Again, that's trymiracle.com/WCN and use code WCN to treat yourself. Thank you again to Miracle Maid for sponsoring this episode.
They were in the smack middle of this worldwide LSD operation. It's this global LSD empire, and they took me into their world. It gets even wilder. She's from Kansas. In that same area, there are all these decommissioned missile silos. These places that were meant for warheads now became this epicenter for psychedelics. My Amish-looking trafficker, a handful of months prior, he decides to shut everything down and hand everyone over, except this nerdy girl, to law enforcement. All the people that he had been distributing LSD with, he got all of them thrown in jail for immunity of some sort. He hands the whole network over. And then he's trying to lay low because he's from Tulsa. He has a wealthy family. His stepfather is a G-man. He was raised in the whole alphabet soup of government agencies. He has a lot of financial backing because of his family ties. And it's extremely important that their son not be messing up all their philanthropic ventures. So it's okay for the family and for the town to just cover up the bad things that are going on because it's for a greater purpose. He had years and years of getting away with real sadistic things. He had been using other people as drug guinea pigs for many moons at this point. Now they're attempting to sell off the remainder of their stash at a rave. And that's where our stories collide. It's like something out of a movie. Going from dominating the LSD missile silos to bumping into me at a rave because they're broke. So there I was, just this regular guy from Oklahoma, selling to my peeps when suddenly get offered the chance to trade up. It was too much for my barely 18-year-old neurodivergent brain. I broke up with my girlfriend. Like a moth to hell's flame, I simply couldn't resist the opportunity. I got into drug dealing. The nerdy chemistry student. I was convinced by her story. My male traffickers, just a wild old associate, someone she wanted to be free from. She had plenty of stories to fill me in. I started thinking she was the one for me. She was someone to love, to protect. In her, I saw my struggles. I believed our journey was building a peaceful life beyond the chaos that she and I knew. I thought I'd secured a soulmate. What I'd really secured was a life of pain. She actually had other plans for me. Survivors and victimizers can be one and the same. Independence Day, 2003, my freedom was taken away from me. Hotel room 1411 will eternally be etched into my personal history. Its dramatic irony is just so thick because it was across from our city's courthouse and main detective halls when the fireworks and thunder came to an end. Fractals of my soul were like unable to mend. I was their human guinea pig. What came out in court and all the testimonies and stuff. There was weeks of preparation put into the anal suppositories and the injections and the concoctions that they used on my body. I just have track marks everywhere. Pretty much any place that could be injected was injected. All my neck, my back, everything. I had puncture wounds all over it. I remember one time sitting in the bathtub naked with 2 inches of cold water. My male trafficker sitting on the toilet asking me questions. I'm just pleading, dude, why are you doing this to me? His response was, she's mine. I just remember the force of the punt to my groin jolting me awake again. I just remember him towering over me, his face red with rage. His punts damaging me permanently, being hog-tied, feet in the air, kicked in the groin just repetitively, everything going black, nothing but silence and pain. I just remember his silent syringe going into my testicle. I remember him cradling me naked in his lap as he injected me, took a razor blade and sliced my shaft open. It was meant to start the gangrene infection. The pain was too intense. One of the things they did was hang me by my groin. They also tied a telephone cord around my package. In essence, tried ripping it off. There was reports of a broom being used, a lot of sadistic things from the physical standpoint. This would be day two out of my 7 days of sadistic torture at the hands of a psychedelic sociopath. On day three, my lifeless body gave way. The reality was too severe. My soul left my body. It found zero reason to stay here. My torturer used his emergency doctor kit and resuscitated me back into captivity to continue playing his games. He was driving back and forth like a maniac, meeting with the head judge in Tulsa for some other hearing. So he thought he was creating this perfect airtight alibi because his alibi was going to be a head judge. It just didn't work out for him. There's three individuals involved. The main trafficker, the nerdy chemistry student, the hired hitman. They told him I was an undercover cop. It was the cover story that my traffickers were using to get the hitman involved, which wasn't hard to believe because they had just done this massive LSD bust. He was hired to teach me a lesson. But the week went on and he grew paranoid that they were setting him up to be their fall guy. He had sensed something was off. He was refusing to play along with their twisted plan. Instead of breaking my neck, the driver of the car, the hired hitman, had become my unlikely of guardian angels. I was removed from the hotel room. My next memory, I was riding shotgun quickly in a moving car at night, nothing but a sheet covering me. I remember pulling down the previous hotel's linen, surprised not to see my torturer or the nerdy chemistry student, but someone new was driving me. The hitman was equally alarmed. His swift right jab to my nose pretty much resolved any confusion. And before I knew it, I found myself over our southern state line, deep in the heart of Texas. The hitman left me dying and bruised. Meanwhile, the nerdy girl waits in the distance, ready in the getaway Porsche. The hitman hides my car deep in the trees, out of sight, off some highway about 15 miles off the Gulf Coast, Texas City, Texas. I remember thick darkness, deep woods, cicadas chirping, but ever the naive optimist, I'd figured the hitman, my unlikely guardian angel, knew how tired I was and simply wanted to let me rest. He carried and laid me down in the woods. Unfortunately, there would not be much resting that night as the chemical concoctions left my body. Pain, nausea, convulsions. But as the sun came up, so did my hope. I heard a tractor in the distance. Distant commuters traveling to work. I dragged my black and blue disfigured mask, worming it in the hot dirt, my Texas death crawl. Only to be met face to face with barbed wires on a fence line, separating me from safety. I see a nearby discarded towel at the base of a wooden fence post, but it shields my skin from being ripped open. I had to plop myself over this barbed wire fence, and I couldn't have done that without that blanket. I find myself laying on the shoulder of this highway, watching drivers pass by starting their morning. Too busy to notice, too busy to help. I look like I'm out of a horror movie. I just sat there next to the highway, my upper body supported by the nearby fence post, desperate to get people's attention, but I had no energy left. Remember me telling you that story of me at age 3 or 4, and there's a being in the doorway. I try yelling for help, but I can't summon my voice. I am now finding myself in that scenario again. I was lucky to still be alive. Out of the corner of my eye, I see a police car in the distance. In a moment of desperation, I muster all of my energy. I wave my arm, trying to gain his attention. And I just see him pass by. He just drives off in the distance. I have no tears. I just close my eyes to die. Next thing I know, I lift my eyelids at the sound of the patrol car coming in reverse. The officer with both his gun and fear directed solely at me. Needless to say, he and I are both very confused. Thinking I'm still in Tulsa, Oklahoma, having no clue I'm actually in a small town near Galveston, Texas. I'm simply pleading with him to let me lie down in the back of his air-conditioned patrol car. That's all I can think about. That's all I want. With his gun drawn in a panic motion, he just speaks to the radio on his shoulder and he just keeps saying, "Where's the heroin? Where's the heroin? What drugs you on? Stay with me, son. Answer me." I'm just nodding in and out of consciousness. And I'm unable to provide much answers. My next memory, I hear ambulance sirens. I'm riding in a paramedics. They're pushing, prodding, pinching me. I can't find my veins. Racing down the highway. I remember hearing them say I have 45 minutes to live. And I pass out. Eventually, I get to the hospital safely. They had to do a spinal tap. My lungs collapsed. My body was seemingly damaged beyond repair. They had to keep my hospital stay private so my kidnappers couldn't come finish me off. I could not keep any fluids down. I had crazy rashes. My groin was unrecognizable. I had multiple injuries that weren't even identified in the hospital. They had no clue what was wrong with me. I eventually was released from the hospital because insurance ran out. I think I'd been there like 12 days. Was not improving. So they literally just loaded me up in the back seat of my parents' truck. At this point, the people that had kidnapped and tortured me were on the lam. I'm sleeping with a loaded gun under my pillow. The main trafficker got arrested while leaving Burning Man. The nerdy chemistry student set him up like a Lifetime movie. It's comical how everything ends up. He got busted in Reno. They brought him to Oklahoma to be tried for my case. We went through a lengthy court proceeding. It was incredibly triggering because it was the first time for me to be back with my female kidnapper. I see her sitting in the courtroom, but I actually confronted her. And then I confronted the hitman. When I was summoned to court one day, I was supposed to meet the district attorney at the top floor of county courthouse. Elevator door opens, and it's the freaking hitman. It should not even be allowed to happen. But the hitman is in the elevator with me. And I'm flipping out. I get off the elevator. He goes one way. I go another. I go and actually meet with the district attorney. He wants me to stick around for a little bit so I could be there for another meeting. I'm walking in some back corridor just trying to kill time. I turn the corner and then all of a sudden, there's the hitman. He falls to his knees and he just starts crying over and over again. Stab me, just kill me, just punch me. I'm so sorry, just end my life. And it's so ridiculous that I'm just like, all right, dude, chill. Get up. Please, this is embarrassing. I guess I can consider forgiving you. So that's two of the individuals. The third individual, he was sentenced for my kidnapping and torture. And he was given 90 years plus a life sentence. The one that is actually culpable of all my physical trauma. He's not allowed to contact me directly. I'm not allowed to contact him directly. But we, through a series of events, have established a third-party handler. He and I have since buried the hatchet. I've just moved on with my life. I am fully recovered mentally. Physically, they jacked me up beyond repair. I'm still in a lot of physical pain. On a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being excruciating pain, I have not been below a 7 in 21 years. I cannot remember life not being excruciating pain. Just in my groin region alone, I probably have 9 to 12 different injuries, trauma points, pain points. It's just nonstop pain. Even right now as we're speaking, it feels as if I have sunglasses on my head because my skull has seized up and has never unseized. I do events now for work, and sometimes I have to walk 15 miles in a day doing events. The next days I'm in tears just having to move, but I got a family support. I still live in the same town where all this happened. I've never done anything with my actual story because from my perspective, the kidnapping is just one of my stories. There are some elements of society that know about my story and will sometimes even seek me out. I'm on several human trafficking committees. A professor invited me to come and tell my story because she teaches a human trafficking class and I want to give back. I'm actually going to do that next Tuesday. I'm going to have some cameramen, maybe local news and stuff show up. One of the reasons people are going to be showing up is because I'm not actually going to be there alone. I'm going to share my story, but at the end of it, I'm going to reveal to the audience the hitman. I spent 4th of July with him. That's my anniversary. He's a dear friend. We reach out whenever needed. I contacted him to check the veracity of my story. I want to make sure what I'm saying is actually accurate. He says, Brandon, not only is this accurate, but it's impactful. He actually has agreed to being on camera and being interviewed. He'll be answering some questions there. On my end, it's been brought out of me organically because I will get phone calls from my dad. Brandon, I got this gentleman on the front porch saying that he would like to speak with you. Or there's this newspaper that's running a story. The journalist wants to interview you. I call them. They tell me they have had a group invested in researching me and my story for 10 plus months. And they are completely done. They are about to run with my story and would like to know if I would like to read it or if I have any comments. And I'm like, well, freak balls. So I was like, well, I should probably get ahead of the story. I agree to meet with them. They end up interviewing me and taking my photo. That was This Land Press. They did a great article. I've really appreciated working with them. They are my resource to stay on top of all the details. It's too much for me. There's been multiple individuals that have become passionate about the story, not necessarily because of my kidnap and torture, but because of the interesting characters involved. There's storage units filled with documents and archival footage. But every once in a while, I will have someone such as you that will manage to get a hold of me or strike a chord with me. And I will every once in a while agree to speak with them. I have since started working with documentarians that I've now worked with for over a handful of years, and I consider them dear friends and brothers. It's all been self-funded, so we've never done anything with it. Since being a survivor of human trafficking, I have gotten busy with making babies and being with my gorgeous sweetheart of a wife I met in high school that was so patient to stick with me and also wise enough to stay away from me in high school because we knew each other. We were able to reconnect later in life. She has been a rock star. I see it as being blessed with my neurodivergent arsenal. It's taken me a long time to get my sea legs. Coming from a kid caught up in the black market, all jacked up internally, to now raising 3 handsome, healthy sons with my sexy wife on our adorable hobby farm. It has afforded me the wherewithal and the bandwidth to start putting names to many of my lifelong, unhealthy, repetitive problems. My neurodivergent path as an adult, while starting to stabilize in a healthy environment, I was able to start categorizing and coping. And now I've been able to make it into a tapestry that is my life, a list of resources that I can draw from. I actually work with a long list of incredible nonprofits, and I've had the ability to help protect Oklahoma's youth. I've been honored and blessed to get a bill passed in the House of Representatives here in Oklahoma. It changed the language in our state statute from child prostitution. Here in Oklahoma, if you were under the age of 18, if you found yourself caught in an act of prostitution, you were arrested and charged as a child prostitute. But if they are 17 or under and they are caught in an act of prostitution, it's because there's something wrong. They're underage. Someone needs to check in and be helping this person, especially in Oklahoma. Trafficking is generally familial trafficking. And so it is something that is extremely intimate. If some kid is out there prostituting, whether they are 8, 14, or 17, they do not need to be charged as a prostitute. The bill passed unanimously. So now if you're 17 or under in Oklahoma, you get busted, you're no longer charged as a child prostitute. Now you're a victim of sex trafficking and you get resources instead of being penalized. My road to recovery has been a tough one. It's a daily process. Don't guarantee anyone will wake up one day saying they've recovered. But the one thing I've learned is that life doesn't give you a roadmap. It's more like a compass and a freaking slap on the back. There's not a lot of assistance. You kind of have to learn as you go. But I've learned. And now I feel transformed. I'm a person who navigated those scary waters of neurodivergence without a map. I'm someone that's actually stood at the intersections of depravity, recovery, faith and identity, freedom, legality, life, death. And I've had to learn firsthand what it takes to reconcile all the above. The thing that has made the lasting impact are personal relationships. There have been some key figures throughout these years that I have been able to trust, have been able to open up to and allow them to speak into my life and be accountable with them. Going through so many extreme scenarios, I don't want to just take advice from anyone. But I have found that there are some people that will resonate with me. Hearing them talk will actually provide the answers needed in that moment. Not everyone has a support network. I have had times in my life that I don't necessarily have someone that I can connect with vulnerably in that moment. I can tell you that little podcast icon has saved my butt so many times. It can be something as faithful as what came next. It can be the safe space that you build around you. I will have these systems and procedures I can rely on that will keep me safe and secure in the moment. I didn't have what came next. It strikes a chord that the name of the podcast is even What Came Next, because for me, and something that the listening body should know about me, is that my journey has been filled with pretty much abrupt changes out of nowhere. So I love that your title, the whole premise is What Came Next, because I've been someone that's had to lean into change. I obviously struggle with complex PTSD. One of the things that I've been able to do, if I don't necessarily have someone to speak into my life, is have wholesome and healthy distractions. One of the things I like to do is try to get AI to represent art from my childhood. That instance of that spirit being in my doorway, when life is too much for me, I will actually just go to AI and I'll be like, let's create some classic art with a Baroque style of a four-year-old boy sitting in a bed with this mystic being in the doorway. And then all of a sudden I get to turn it into some art form. I have found positive ways to take my emotional and physical pain and convert it into something practical. I will make sure that every morning I spend some time in the Bible. I find it to be uplifting for me. I accredit my ability to forgive, move on, and progress has came from an external strength that was not mine, because anytime I did things on my own, they would end up in a glorious shitstorm. I have felt like God has put a promise in my heart post-kidnapping that someday all of this pain and suffering would be worthwhile. That's why I'm preaching radical forgiveness. It took me a long time to come to this 21 years later. I've came to that position out of necessity and out of grit. A good life philosophy is make good choices, love yourself, love others, forgive yourself, forgive others, and being optimistic. And I actually risk a lot by sharing. Because of my career, I'm not in a position where I should be sharing freely. The reason why I'm willing to share freely is because I really do want to help. I just want to be of service to others, and I hope that I can be a loud and effective warning beacon.
I appreciate you so deeply. I am so sorry for what you've gone through, but you have very much transformed it into a deeply loving, impactful tale. Thank you for being of service to our community today and our audience.
Oh, my pleasure. Amy, I so appreciate you.
Trafficking can be described as the illegal act of transporting or coercing people in order to benefit from their labor, service, or sexual and/or physical exploitation. For more information on trafficking, please listen to episode 35 of What Came Next with Gloria Masters, entitled Handing the Shame Back. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
When I was 6, my dad passed away. I was told that he had a heart attack, and that's how he died. When I was 16, I found out that my dad was murdered. Anything that I felt drawn to do really was now filtered through my dad was murdered and now I have to solve it.
Thank you again to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/WCN and use the code WCN to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/WCN and use code WCN to treat yourself. What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.